All right. Welcome to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Pellwood Fantasy Football Podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It's great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I am excited for our lead. It was a good week for the lead in week 8, and we're headed into week 9. The health of the lead is very strong. The engagement of the players is at its peak, and personally, I lost, so you know that's a little bit of a bummer. But as a commissioner, as a fan of our lead here, it's a very exciting week for us.
Yeah, it's awesome to just glance through the stats and the standings and to see it's been a tight race throughout the. I don't remember a closer race of present, you know, recent history, and certainly the teams that have been in the bottom half have maintained a run after this week to boot the week of upsets. Quite a week we just came off of here in week 8. Very weird NFL week. High scoring, a lot of high QB performances, but
and a lot of injuries.
A ton of injuries we'll be getting to. And I'm looking forward to visiting about those. We do have a special guest that we get to talk specifically about those injuries. Pete, would you like to introduce him?
Absolutely. So he's not at the top of the standings, but he is at the top of the transaction log, trade activity account. So we're pleased to welcome Jared to the podcast this week. Maybe 12th in the standings, but first in our hearts. So welcome, Jared.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have you with us.
So, Jared, you've been active this week. You made a couple moves, and certainly, I think before last week, you had a matchup with who's your matchup with? It was Michael, I think. No, it was Scott. That's right. And you're both sitting at 2-5. It was a bit of a do or die. It was kind of loser is probably going to be out for this year because sitting at 2-6. The playoff line's probably going to be 7-6, and you probably don't want to bank on winning out. So you were the unfortunate loser there as Scott's team put up its season high for the year on you. And now you are in full rebuild mode. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely.
So you've traded this week for Jordy Nelson and Jamal Charles to join Arian Foster on your team as as all IR eligible former fantasy football studs who would all be eligible to be kept by you for I think $6 or less next season. Now, very important question. You are aware we can only keep one player in this league.
Yeah, you know, I have made another offer for another injured player just today, actually. And that question was posed to me by that owner also. He said, you know, you can just keep one. I said, yes, that's true. I'm actually petitioning the commissioner during the off season to change that to at least four.
You will be set.
Full strategy cut.
One step ahead of the game there. Yeah. So that probably will not be happening, but I think you know that, and I think you've got a strategy to that as well. Do you want to share that strategy, or is that top of secret information?
No, it's pretty evident, I think.
Let's say, I bet we could take a stab.
I looked around and I said, well, there's just too many cheap guys out there that are not just 1 year keepers. They're 2 year keepers and they are studs. I mean, truly my roster at the end of this season might be the best roster in the league. They're just all going to be injured. Yep. So yeah,
that's quite an asterisk to add to the best roster in the league.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
They're
absolutely
all out for the year.
yeah, no big deal.
So I just figured
we could all fight over those players, you know, next year during the draft.
I like it. It's quite the ultimate form of gamesmanship.
It really is.
In that you are hoarding all of the dead keepers. Yeah. At this point, and knowing that you can't use them,
which means you're wrecking the auction a little bit, or you're at least you're pulling perceived value out of the auction, which means you're actually affecting inflation right from the get-go, which is
absolutely
savvy. Yeah.
Well, and I don't really know if it works or not, because like you just said, it just changes the value of everybody, mm-hmm. of all the players. And so I don't really know that this strategy is
it's
even
gonna
all
do
that
you
valid.
A favor or not.
That right, exactly.
But who doesn't love just watching the world burn sometimes? Am I right? Some people.
Yeah, and I mean, what else are you going to do at this point? Because looking at your team, you're making the assessment that you're not going to win out. You know, you're not going to win the next five games and have an outside chance at a playoff spot if you win a points tiebreaker. And you know, if the playoff line is 7-6. So, I mean, what else are you going to do? You can run out the string, but what you're doing instead is looking forward to next season. And I think I think there are some people who probably would have a problem with this, but as commissioner, I love it because I don't want people to just fade into the night. I want them to have something to stay engaged and stay active. So this is probably a rule with these IR players that other leagues would poo-poo on as far as being able to keep the IR players for cheap after you pick them up off the waiver wire. But I think it adds a certain element to the league. And as a first year participant, I'm glad that you're jumping right into that.
Well, I wish the season had gone a different way.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about that. Where do you think it went wrong for you? Was it, doing an auction for the first year? Was it injuries? Was it just, misevaluating players? Where do you feel like it took a bad turn? Just bad luck?
I think really it's just that I hadn't played season long in 6 or 7 years. And while I did a lot of research, I typically look at things with more of a DFS slant. And while I tried to do the season long research, I think I let my DFS research kind of slant me a little bit towards certain players that wound up not being great values, and so I overpaid. And the two guys that I can specifically think of are Vincent Jackson, who I really thought would have a great year, and I paid a lot for him. And I recall in the first pod after the draft, or the draft review pod, that Seth commented that I overpaid for him. And I really didn't think at the time that I had, but I clearly did. And then Jeremy Hill, of course, who really, I think, will have a good rest of the season. He gets to play Cleveland twice. I think he's going to be really good, or at least decent for the rest of the year. But spending $50 of my budget on him just was not good.
He didn't turn out like anybody thought, I think. But thinking about how – actually, you're the first caller we've had on the line that is newest to our league, having fresh eyes this year. Coming into it, you said that you've been in the DFS slant for a good while now. Have you done an auction draft before? And when was the last auction draft you did before this one, if you had?
No, I hadn't. I did 3 or 4 mock drafts, just to kind of practice, but sure. I had never actually done a real one. And of course, the mocks don't fully prepare you.
Sure, especially for a fully committed and strategized roster of managers coming in to.
Absolutely.
There's sharks out for blood. But considering that, I mean, it wasn't like you were out there in the ocean with floaties on. You did a pretty decent job holding your own. I mean, it's a learning process. And I remember getting burned. I know that all of us could say we had a season where we got burned in the draft because we just weren't prepared right, or weren't thinking right, or we're trying something new that didn't pay off. And ultimately, you walked away, I think, having an incredible contribution to our league, not only in your performance within the draft, but also just your buy-in to the league overall. But what has been your experience with being one of the fresh guys, the rookies, if you will, into the Pellwood League? How can you describe your entrance, your draft, and your experience thus far?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it, and still am enjoying it. I almost
Well, I'll get to that in a second. I was going to talk more about my strategy here as we enter this part of the season for me. Mm-hmm. But the draft was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It's kind of right up my alley. It was the most fun I've had in fantasy football in a long, long time. I actually made a trade that same day with Brock right after the draft.
That's right.
Which that was fun. It was enjoyable. You know, all of my trade talks with everybody have been, you know, fairly amiable, except for the ones, of course, that weren't ever answered. so those just didn't go anywhere. But sure. I think that was me and everybody. Actually, the other misstep I had is Derek was quite willing to trade me the day of the draft to trade both Devontae Freeman and Tannehill to me. Oh. And I had wanted Tannehill, but I didn't want Freeman. and so we actually also had a conversation a few weeks later, and he was still willing to trade Freeman to me. Goodness. And it was something I should have pulled the trigger on. So
because you drafted Tevin Coleman.
Well, that's who I traded Brock
for. And so those conversations with Derek were after you had traded Coleman to Brock?
Well, no, that's who I traded
for.
I traded John Brown for Coleman.
Right. Oh, that's right. So, and so then you could have had both Atlanta running backs.
Yes. Yeah, I could have.
Interesting.
But yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. I actually, when I got to 2-5, I almost put my IR heavy plan into effect then because I got so excited about it. I just thought this is just a weird
gonna thing be that to guy.
Do. It's gonna be weird. but I was excited about it and telling my buddies at work, look, my season has sucked, but this is the plan.
I mean, I've got Tony Romo sitting in my slot. What do you got for me? Look over. Is there anything left to pick off of the bones of your team here?
I
don't know.
There he is. We've still got Antonio Gates. I think he could be good the rest of the way. We've got Forte when he gets back healthy.
Sure. All right.
So,
you may get a text from me. We'll see.
We'll see.
So, I mean, looking at your draft, I mean, you know, you can look at, Jeremy Hill – was $50. Vincent Jackson was $25. You know, Jonathan Stewart up until the last 3 weeks, he was $21. And, you know, just, you know, the where you spent your money, except for Allen Robinson, was just, you know, bust, bust, bust.
Yep.
And then, you know, the trade you've made so far was John Brown for Tevin Coleman. That didn't work out for you. And then Matt Forte. You traded away Jonathan Stewart and Odell Beckham Jr. for Matt Forte and Rishard Matthews, and that hasn't worked out for you. You know, so it's just a lot of bad luck stuff going on. And you know, really, when I look at my draft, I'm like, man, I've had so much dumb luck because my two favorite draft picks that I made were the two of my last three picks, which was Carson Palmer for $1 and Deion Lewis for $1, and you know, they've been two of my best players, and so. You know, you just, I don't know. And I, you know, I spent for CJ Spiller and Arian Foster and, you know, I paid a good price for those guys. And I thought they were going to be my, my top two running backs. And, you know, they're both, I dropped Spiller and Foster's hurt for the year. So, you know, there's just, I don't know. It's just funny how the auction draft works out. You know, it can go very, very poorly, very quickly, even with the best of intentions and research. So don't beat yourself up too much. It is a tough luck year. Glad you're embracing it though.
Yep.
Oh yeah. It's still fun.
It is fun. I'm looking at your schedule from the past, 8 weeks. And although you didn't come out of the gate very strong in week one, you bounced back and kind of brought yourself back to the middle 115 range, not having scored over 120 in any week except for week four, where you and just darn the luck, Derek. I know I mention it every week, but poor guy has just had the crappiest scheduling contest
the worst.
This season. Although congratulations to you. I'm not saying that that wasn't a well-deserved win. You put up 163 points on the board. So, but other than that, you've hovered around the 115, 120 mark. Nothing surpassing 120. And this week facing Brian, who right now I believe y'all's projection is about 20 points separated, about 23 points separated. Which, like what Peter said, it's not that we're intentionally counting you out because we're hopeless jerks, but just the math says probably not, and your strategy is also demonstrating that you're of that same accord as well, as you're looking to fire sale for the keepers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, it's not like your goal is to lose. It's not like you get a better draft pick by losing or anything like that, but it's just that, you know, fielding the best possible starting lineup isn't the number one priority at this point for you. And as far as, you know, the timing and the schedule, it works out pretty well, because this week 9, we enter back into divisional play. So the last 5 weeks of the regular season coming up, you'll play everyone within your division. So from that standpoint, everyone in your division will get the same fair treatment if your starting lineup isn't as stout anymore. So we're not favoring the schedule isn't too unbalanced at this point.
Good.
Not that you care about that, but just
I kind of do. Yeah. I hate that implementing this plan does have some impact on this season, which certainly it does. Not that that's unfair completely. Certain people, Andy was smart enough to draft Jordy with his last pick in the auction, and he made that a goal, and he's getting rewarded for that to some degree.
And I also appreciate that you did reach out to me before you started doing this, just to, as commissioner, make sure I was okay with it. And
classy.
Exactly. And what I told you was, you know, I'll veto anything where it, you know, there's no fair exchange of value, or, you know, at least relatively fair exchange of value.
Yeah.
So in the moves you've made, it's been, you know, there's value in that keeper and there's value in the player that you're trading away, you know, for this season. So it's a relative, you know, a fair assessment of value for value. It's just whether it's for this season or next.
Sure.
That's good. Well, Kamish, thanks for keeping a close eye on that. As we do get into this, the teams dropping off, sometimes the fire sale can become, let's just screw everybody over and see what we can't pass. So in the end, we landed on the commissioner veto setup because we found that brings a cleaner and tighter consistency to the mid to late season trade-off, sink or swim kind of economy.
Yeah, so long as everyone can trust me with that veto, it is a much more efficient system and effective system because – I can push a trade through instantly if we're, you know, making a trade on Thursday and, you know, someone's playing in that Thursday night game and it's like, you know, am I going to have the player this week? You know, I can push it through. And if it is a trade that needs to be vetoed because it's just obvious collusion, then I can veto it without having to text everyone in the league, be like, hey, sign in and veto this trade, you know? So it's, it also prevents a legitimate trade being vetoed just because lead members don't like it. You know, I don't like that deal.
I don't like who that deal benefits.
Yeah, so I've got my finger on the big red button, and I'm trying to serve the people and use it wisely.
The people to you, the people.
Before I launch that nuclear missile, I will. You know, take great precautions before.
Do you feel in charge? that's what I'm saying. I'm in charge of the.
I get it. So looking at the lead right now, we're all we got Brent is out there at 7-1, and Jared is back there at 2-6, and then the other 10 teams we're all lumped between 5-3 and 3-5. And so, you know, that's pretty great. We got three teams at 5-3, three teams at 4-4, and four teams at 3-5. So, you know, the cutoff line right now is a 4-4 team. I think Brian holds the last playoff spot right now with just a four point lead in the tiebreaker over Ben in points four. So really any of those teams sitting at 3-5, 4-4 still have a chance in it. So I think next week, Seth, we'll have to try to bust out the playoff odds.
Stats spreadsheet. Yeah.
That we found last year.
Stumbled upon
playoff odds creator, which was pretty awesome.
It was awesome.
We'll try to start updating that every week, starting next week through the end of the season, so we can kind of keep tabs on who's got the best shot. We're factoring in remaining strength of schedule and all that sort of thing.
That's right. Well, all Jared, right. You've got a matchup coming up this week, and all of your, like what you said, the best roster in the league is also all injured. And so your chances don't look awesome. You do have Derek Carr as your starting QB. Think what you want about him.
Well, you know, so the New England running backs, it's tricky, right? But it's also really predictable when it's going to be a Blunt game or when it's going to be a Deion Lewis game. And Deion Lewis is the number one running back there. But, I mean, this Sunday is obviously going to be a Blunt game. I mean, the Patriots are favored by like 13 points, and they're going to, they're going to stomp all over the Redskins.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's just going to be a game where they're just going to give it to Blunt, and he's going to just, you know, pound away at him. You know, Brady's going to get his, because the Patriots don't stop throwing until, you know, halfway through the fourth quarter, even if they're up by 40 points. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, this is a Blunt game for sure. And so, you know, I think it's
not a bad matchup.
Blunt is a very up and down player, but it's very obvious when he's going to be up and when he's going to be down. So, I mean, just looking at his game log, they were at Buffalo and he got two carries, and then they were home versus Jacksonville and he got three touchdowns. So, you know, obviously they were going to beat Jacksonville by a lot at home. He got three touchdowns. Then they were at Dallas, where he got 13 carries for 74 yards. He didn't score, so, you know, all he got was 74 yards. Then they were at Indianapolis, and the Patriots always run in Indianapolis, so he got his there. He scored 23 points. Then they were home versus the Jets, which was a tough matchup. Blunt was not a factor. And then home versus Miami, and they got out to a big lead, and he you know, got 17 carries again. So, yeah, he's up and down player, but it's pretty obvious when he's going to be up.
Quick little detour down the rest of your roster. Tevin Coleman, James Jones. Now, Rishard Matthews has been remarkably consistent this season. He's probably your strongest wide that I like the most. He's gone up against Buffalo this week. Dontrell Inman. You've got Antonio Gates, who you're a big fan of, and I believe in him. He gets a lot of touches, and he's a I'm not sure where he stands in tight end rankings right now, but I know he's good. And from the rest of it, I'm kind of like, well, we'll see. Good luck, buddy. Pete, do you have any thoughts?
I think just to give you some credit here, Jared, you did nail the James Jones prediction in the draft. I think he was one of your last picks, and you took him with a prediction that he would score more points than Davante Adams this season. Mm. And so far, it has not been close in favor of James Jones. So gotta give you some credit there. Adams could come back late in the season and start to rack up the points, but. So far, I'm looking like a pretty good lock that James Jones is going to, in fact, score more points than Davante Adams.
So, yeah, I think so.
Nice call there. If nothing else went right, you got that James Jones prediction.
That was the best pick of the draft for me. $1 on James Jones.
It's always the $1 pitch that you liked the most. It's like predicting a home run in baseball, where it's the long shot, and you forget all the ones that you did wrong, but you remember the ones you did right.
Absolutely.
So going up against Brian this week, you're currently a 23-point underdog, which is not completely out of reach. You've got enough good players. I mean, Tevin Coleman's really the only obvious hole in your lineup. I mean, there's no one who just makes you go, wow, yeah, they're going to be awesome. But I think Tevin Coleman's really the only obvious hole there. So this is still a lineup that can win a game. And I think Brian's not exactly on a hot streak.
Sure. He's got four guys on bye as well, which several of those would have been choice starters. And so he's definitely locked into the lineup that he's got unless he makes a move outside of what's currently on his team. But I do think, last week we talked about DMC being a pretty critical performance for him, and he turned out to be strong. I do think that his running backs look pretty good, and Doug Martin up against the Giants and DMC up against Philadelphia. I'm excited about watching Cowboys up against the Eagles this week. But other than that, nothing standing out too deeply other than the Broncos' defense against Indianapolis. So it's definitely attainable, my friend. I don't think it's out of reach, but it is your game to overcome.
It is.
So, I mean, sure. Best case scenario is you stockpile the keepers away for next year, and you still play spoiler this year. So I think
or you become the keeper of the keepers, and then sell them to the most desperate bidder. And doing that above board is going to get really challenging really quickly.
Yes, sir. I mean, I don't even know what you'd move a keeper for at this point. It'd have to be a better keeper.
It'd have to be a better keeper. Yep. Todd Gurley, maybe.
Yeah, there you go. Todd Gurley, Devonta Freeman. Yep. Are they available? We'll find out.
We'll find out. We know that Devonta Freeman was available at one point this season. Actually, 2 points this season.
Yeah. You should go back to Derek and be like, hey, remember that trade offer you gave me right after the draft?
I'd like to accept it.
Yeah, that's been – he and I actually talked last night about the fact that Freeman's probably not moving.
Yeah. I mean, there is no reason whatsoever.
No. Yeah, he's done well. Well, Jared, yep. I speak for all the men in the league. It's been great to have you this year. Looking forward to many more seasons with you. I hope you'll stay plugged in and committed as you are to the Pellwood Fantasy Football League. It has been a privilege to compete with you, sir. And while we won't play you a swan song just yet, we are certainly tipping our hat to the boat across the the bay that doesn't look like it's going to make it to port.
Maybe not this year.
No, but really, really appreciate your involvement and loyal listener of the podcast too. So always appreciate that.
Well, thank you guys. I'll continue to listen and even as my season appears to be over, mostly anyway, I will. I'll stay plugged in and set a lineup. My goal is to have an active lineup full of players every week. I guess it's possible if I carried this far enough that it wouldn't happen. But my goal is certainly to have at least the 10 every week.
There you go. I'm all for fire sales. I am vehemently against empty lineups. So absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's still, we've got a highly trafficked Truth and Reconciliation webpage, which at the end of the season will of course have our win loss records and statistics. And so there's no reason why points four and your IVAs and your WL records are not valuable. Those things are still some pride points going up. So there's nothing wrong with seeking after a little bit of the stat.
Jared's IVA can only go up from here because he has no points left on the bench.
I was going to say, it's before I run off real quick here, it's possible, unlikely, but possible that I'll actually catch Derek because of the no points left on the bench the rest of the way.
You might. Maybe an IVA, but probably not in the manager ring.
No, only an IVA.
Well, IVA in and of itself has to have an external check for that reason. Jared, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for jumping on board with us tonight. It's been great to have you.
Absolutely. Y'all have a great night.
And we'll talk to you next time.
All right. We will move on to the rest of the matchups we have this week. Let's start with Derek and Brock's matchup. Derek is sitting at 4-4. Brock is sitting at 5-3, but you look at your teams, you would have no idea that those were the that Brock was ahead of Derek in the standings. Derek, of course, is a darling of the podcast because he never leaves any points on his bench, and he scores crazy amounts of points, and he loses anyway. And he has currently outscored Brock by 250 points on the season. You know, through 8 games, you can do the math. That's 30 points a game, a very wide margin. Yep. And this week, he is favored over Brock by 50 points right now. Brock has DeAndre Hopkins on bye, as well as John Brown. And after that on Brock's team, it gets pretty shallow. So he's hurting this week because of the bye week issue. While Derek appears to be basically at full strength, except for missing Larry Fitzgerald. But that's not hurting him too bad. So, pretty quick, quick wrap up on this one. I think, Derek's got it in the bag. If he loses this, then he will certainly be the, unluckiest team.
Yes, indeed. The only thing I have to add, and I know you know this, but I'm still blown away that 3 out of 4 of Derek's losses came with over 145 points, and that his fourth loss was over 130 points, and he lost by less than 8 points, well, 9 points. So, unbelievable performance, great team, tough schedule matchup. I'll say it every week because I feel for the guy, because there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, 3 of his 4 losses have come when he's scored 145 points. Mm-hmm. And Brock has never won a game where he scored 145 points. All of his wins, he scored less than 145 points. Mm-hmm. And Brock's highest point total of the year, he actually lost. He scored 152 and lost. And his next after that is 139. So that kind of paints the picture for how far ahead of Brock's team Derek's is for the season, and how unlucky he's been.
Yep. Well. Should be a shoe-in this week. Brock will probably make some moves as he will get that roster filled, but those buys in there plus injuries don't look good for him. So
he might also just punt the week. We've seen it done before.
Yeah,
and I think we've seen it done against Derek before. I think that was Andy's strategy 2 weeks ago, and Derek put up his lowest point total of the season in what could have been a winnable game for Andy if all his players weren't on bye, but that's the way it goes sometimes. That was a little bit of good luck for Derek.
Yep. Well, let's hop over to Ben and Michael, shall we? We got Ben coming in at 4-4, Michael sitting at 3-5, and right now it looks like that the bye week bug has bit them both. It probably is going to harm Michael more so than Ben a little bit this week, although he does and is missing Marshawn Lynch. What is your take on a quick rundown? Ben's got T.J. Yeldon is going up against the Jets. We've got T.Y. Hilton going up against Denver, and Odell Beckham Jr. going up against Tampa Bay. That's probably my favorite matchup of his lineup right there.
Yeah, you gotta like Beckham going against Tampa Bay, who has just a really bad secondary. I think Emmanuel Sanders at Indianapolis should also be a good matchup for Ben. I think Sanders should avoid Vontae Davis, who's the Colts' best corner, and Demaryius Thomas get his attention, which should leave plenty of opportunity for Sanders. Other than that, though, I don't really love the running back matchup here with T.J. Yeldon at the Jets, who have a very stout rush defense. And T.Y. Hilton going against Denver. And T.Y. Hilton might not play. He apparently was in a walking boot today. So we'll see if he plays. And even if he plays, he's going against Denver, whose cornerbacks are as suffocating as the Carolina cornerbacks, who limited to Hilton to one catch for 15 yards last week. So, Hilton is not one of those players who I think can perform even in a bad matchup. I think he's pretty bad when he gets a rough matchup. So don't like him this week. Flip it over to Michael's team. I gotta give him a slow clap here. He beat Derek last week in a surprise victory. He was the largest underdog of the season to pull off a victory, or I think he was he was the dog by 30 points and then pulled out a win. And he was incredibly active on the waiver wire in the transactions today, which haven't seen from him really yet this season is being involved in those Wednesday waiver wire transactions. He's more of a ride it out till Saturday and see who's left and plug him in kind of guy. So while he does not have his lineup completely filled in yet, I expect that he will, and it'll look a lot better than it does now. So I'm glad to see him step up the game there a little bit. A little shot of life after the win over one of the best teams in the league last week. So he's got Tom Brady and Julian Edelman, who have been a killer combination when they've been on, which has literally been every game this year.
Yep. Particularly the past couple of weeks, they've been in video game cloud nine.
I mean, Edelman's worst game this season was 5 catches for 54 yards and no touchdown for 11 points, basically. And everything else, he's been at 17 points or higher with crossing the 20-point threshold in 4 out of 7 games. So Edelman's been awesome, number 6 wide receiver on the season. Brady, of course, is the number 1 quarterback on the season. And Washington's secondary is terrible that they're going up against. So as long as they keep throwing, those two are going to have a good day again. For his running backs, he's got C.J. Anderson, who's showing some signs of life the last couple weeks. Went over 100 yards this past week. May not be getting the starters carries in Denver anymore, but looking pretty good. And then he picked up Jeremy Langford, who is Matt Forte's replacement, and he won the bid for him. And he's got a pretty good matchup going against San Diego this week. So, and then he also has Malcolm Floyd for San Diego, who San Diego just lost Keenan Allen, so Floyd's role may expand some, not a lot, but some, in terms of targets coming his way. So a lot to like about Michael's team this week, and I think this will be a very close matchup, as essentially Michael's in a win or go home situation. He's at 3-5. As soon as he did that 6th loss, your odds of making the playoffs are going to go down significantly. So he's got a shot at it, and I won't count him out yet.
Nope. I have a hard time putting the plug. I mean, I think that Ben on paper looks better. Obviously, there's still a few holes, but ultimately, this is a close matchup, and Tom Brady will more than make up for a few weaker spots on Michael's team. So it will be interesting. Down but not out.
All right, let's go to Brent and Chris, which has the matchup of the two teams with the best record in the league this week. Chris has won back-to-back weeks on come-from-behind Monday night victories. Last week he won with needing just 7 points from Andrew Luck, and through 3/4 of the game, Luck was at -2 points. So it was not looking like he was going to get it until...
I bet that felt terrible, just... Wasn't in those shoes, but I imagine that sitting through 3/4 of the game.
I think he was developing an ulcer. Luck, of course, finished with 17 points on the night after having a big 4th quarter with a couple touchdowns. The weather was really impacting that game, and it kind of cleared up in the second half. So,
I noticed he didn't make the starting roster this week.
that is true. He is. He's on the bench for Chris this week with probably good reason. He's got Jameis Winston out there instead. Don't address the Giants, who did just get torched by Drew Brees, so maybe some hope for Winston to have a good week again this week. Who's actually been a very consistent scorer. He is yet to have a kind of a huge bust of a game in the single digits. When his throwing hasn't been there, he's kind of saved himself with a rushing touchdown. So. He's scored between 13 and 22 points every game this season, so nothing to scoff at there. Of course, the best player for Chris is now Todd Gurley, who's just an absolute beast, going over 125 yards in 4 straight games rushing, then chipping in a few catches
to go
along with that. So you gotta love Gurley. Beyond that, Chris has been riding Gary Barnage's incredible hot streak, who's the now number 2 tight end on the year, scoring 6 touchdowns in the last 6 weeks. Just a monster at tight end. However, Cleveland is starting Johnny Football this week, and that should probably hurt Barnage's production. Chris also has the two Oakland wide receivers, Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, who have both been very effective. It's rare for a team to sustain two top fantasy wide receivers. You know, Denver's done it, Green Bay's done it, but Oakland is not a team you'd expect to do it. But they those two guys have been really, really good, and they've got a pretty good matchup going against Pittsburgh this week too. So I like Chris's team here. However, he is going against Brent, who is the best team in the league, and you know, there's really nothing to dislike about Brent's team. You know, I think this might be closer right now. It's a 22-point spread in terms of projection. I think it may end up closer than that. Brent, of course, lost Le'Veon Bell and Keenan Allen for the year this past week in the Armageddon of injuries that it was. So now he's, you know, got D'Angelo Williams in his starting lineup, but he's not hurting too bad. He's got Chris Ivory in the flex now. That's still a pretty good flex. So Brent's team's still looking strong even after those two big injuries. So hat tip to him for having that kind of depth on his team.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I marvel at it weekly. The only comment I have is just looking at his tight end with Jordan Reed. If Gary Barnage has been the number one, I would imagine that Jordan Reed is up there at number two or three. Is that true?
He's the number eight tight end on the year. But
seriously? His concussion knocked his stats out because he is the bomb.
Yeah, he missed 2 weeks, and in his return in week seven, he scored 30 points and then was on bye last week. So going against New England is probably a little bit of a tougher matchup. But, yeah, Jordan Reed's been really good. He gets lots of balls thrown his way when he's healthy, but he's one of those guys who's
not a bad Travis Kelce substitute. Yeah.
No.
For sure. Well, our money's on Brent, but
it'd be money's on Brent, but I think Chris may surprise this week and beat his 123-point projection. So
yeah, we're very non-committal in our choices. With
yeah, we used to be a much more firm on it. I think as the season's gone on, we've seen there's not really any slam dunks here.
Well, we locked Eric in.
Yeah. So yeah, there are slam dunks, but whenever there is any sort of window of uncertainty, it is
we take the conservative.
It is both prudent and more fun to leave the door open to the unexpected.
Plus, we're still trying to get sponsorships for our show.
Right. We got to crank that drama up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I was thinking we don't want to look like idiots. But, yes, the drama is also helpful. Yeah.
Right, indeed. All right, let's move to the Elwood Bowl.
Yep, that's right. Isn't this round two? It's
round
Elwood Bowl Redux.
Yeah, Andy texted me earlier today and said he felt a lot better about his chances when I wasn't – when I didn't have a quarterback or a defense roster. So
well,
it was a much closer projection before I plugged in a quarterback and a defense. But right now I'm favored by 19 points. I've got Carson Palmer on bye, so I've got Tyrod Taylor in there.
Mm-hmm.
I lost Steve Smith this week for this season after losing Arian Foster the week before. I surprised myself that I had Stevie Johnson on my bench, who is probably going to get the biggest increase in value with Keenan Allen going out for San Diego.
Yep.
I went to check the free agent list and see if Stevie Johnson was out there, and was pleasantly surprised when I searched for his name and my team name popped up in the
poor guy.
The team
got lost in the third string.
Yeah, he was just sitting there on my bench, and I hadn't even noticed. So you can call me a bad owner for that, but I own Stevie Johnson. I know that now.
Yeah, you sure do.
Yeah, Andy's at Mark Ingram, who I really liked this week. Tyree Robinson went out for the year. Surprise, surprise, another injury, but that should just increase Ingram's stranglehold on the running back role in New Orleans. Andy traded for Allen Robinson, gave up his keeper pick of Jordy Nelson to get Allen Robinson this week. So that's a big shot in the arm for his wide receiver group there. But Dante Moncrief has a tough matchup with Denver. Anquan Boldin has Blaine Gabbert throwing to him now. So that's, you know, that's an instant hit to the. Well, I don't know. Colin Kaepernick wasn't good, so Dabbert may in fact be better for Bolden. It's it probably can't get worse than Kaepernick. So we'll see what happens there. But Andy's got Aaron Rodgers going against a tough Carolina defense. Devontae Adams there as well. And Adams may see some coverage from Josh Norman, the Carolina stud corner there. Will be a tough one for him to score some points. So no obvious really good matchups for Andy outside of Mark Ingram, I think, this week. So I feel comfortable giving myself the nod in this one.
Yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers will have a bounce back week after I think he had a record bad week last week. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't think he'd been held below 150 yards passing before last week, and he only put up 77. So.
Yeah, unbelievable. But he'll bounce back, but I don't know how strongly. So I was recommending Andy Dalton over him to my buddy earlier today, which makes sense anyway. But
except for it's Andy Dalton in primetime tomorrow night. And
He doesn't do great.
I've said before. Yep. First time Andy Dalton's in primetime, I'm going to play whatever defense zone against him. I am now realizing I am not a man true to my word. I am just realizing now that he's playing Thursday night. However, I won't be starting the Browns defense because they are going to be missing their best cornerback. And I think Dalton will be just fine. But he won't be awesome. How about that for a prediction?
Oh well, okay.
He will be above average.
He will play football well.
He will be better than 15 other quarterbacks this week.
Right. So I like Brandon Marshall up against Jacksonville, assuming he's healthy this week. On your team, I do have a question. Why would you not play Lamar Miller over Jeremy Hill?
Dang it! I don't like when you ask me questions like that, Seth, because it
I've been right.
You're two for two.
but that one just doesn't make sense. You've got Lamar Miller up against Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
And Jeremy Hill up against Cleveland. I don't know if there's a decision to be had there. Number two RB, I think you go with Lamar.
Well, the Cleveland rushing defense is abysmal. Buffalo can be pretty stout at home.
That's true.
So, yeah, okay. You know, Lamar Miller will probably outscore Hill this week.
Now that I've said it,
You got me with Ronnie Hillman last week, and I forget who it was earlier this season. But, yeah, you specifically questioned one roster hole, and it turns out to – and I mean, last week it would have won me my matchup if I had Ronnie Hillman in my flex instead of Randall Cobb. So, Thanks for.
I'm just trying to be a friend.
Giving me that shadow of a doubt now, as I will anxiously watch the Thursday night game, knowing that if Jeremy Hill does poorly, I'll be hearing it from you. So.
I won't say a word. I'll let the I was wrong segment do the talking for me.
Yeah. I had a couple of I was wrong moments this past week, and I dropped the Kansas City defense on Sunday morning before their London game started.
Yeah.
Picked up the Titans defense, and that was an 11-point difference. That would have won me the game.
That also would have won, yeah.
I started Randall Cobb over Ronnie Hillman. That would have won me the game. So, yeah.
Only you had a friend who had your best interest at heart and could make such a recommendation ahead.
I know you're my friend with my best interest at heart. I didn't know you had a crystal ball. You should really tell me these things.
My IVA says I don't have a crystal ball.
A friendship disclosure. Yeah. How am I supposed to listen to you? You can't even manage your own team. And here you're making sniper picks of my team.
Well, speaking of me,
let's talk more about me.
Let's hop over to the game of the week. And by the way, I suggested that Brent's game be the game of the week because of the matchup going into it, but Peter said, no, we need to talk about your team. And I part of me says, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I get the spotlight. It's game of the week. It's always fun. But I really don't appreciate the circumstances at which I'm the game of the week. I am sitting in the the head-to-head Survivor game. This is now the winner stays in matchup. And Scott's coming off of a really big week. He does have a few injuries to deal with this week, and the bye bug is biting him pretty hard. But I'm not confident. So what say you, Pete?
Well, I mean, the other thing to point out, I don't know if you remember this, but I open up the preview matchup page here, and I see a previous matchup listed. And I don't know if you have any kind of terrible flashbacks to that previous matchup. Do you recall what happened the last time you played Scott?
I do.
It was the Carlos Hyde game, Seth.
I remember.
The Carlos Hyde game.
I remember. And
Carlos Hyde has been terrible since.
It was the big game.
And you lost by 0.2 points after Carlos Hyde went bananas on Monday night after you'd gone to bed. Now you get to take out your revenge on Scott this week. Fighting for your life. How could this not be the game of the week?
It is. I just don't like the fact that I'm in this position.
So right now you don't have a defense rostered, and you're basically a 1-point underdog. So you put a defense in there, you're about a 4 or 5 point favorite. So looking at it, you've got Eli Manning, who is now somehow the number 4 quarterback on the year, but I guess throwing 6 touchdowns last week will certainly help with that.
I mean, he had 2 bad weeks. Like, he went up against the Eagles and did terrible against Dallas.
Yep.
Terrible against Dallas.
But you stuck with him. I mean, he's been your man all year long.
He has been.
Unwavering from draft day on.
But Dallas had his number. They had it week 1, and they had it week 7. And other than that, and with just a tough performance against the Eagles, he has been all the kinds of surprising to me. Like, I have eaten my hat more than once this season. So thank you, Eli Manning, for carrying me in a season that I thought I was going to have to go week to week.
Yeah, so you didn't put up a season high last week, but you did have a very good week. Thanks to Eli. Thanks to Andre Johnson. Thanks to Greg Olson. Some of these players who we have discussed before for your team, they all showed up for you last week. So this week,
that was
though,
the magic. I mean, that's what we said last week. They all have to show up if I'm going to win.
Yep, and there they were. This week, though, you are going up against Scott, who's got the revitalized team with Alshon Jeffrey and Dez Bryant plugged in there now, and Alan Hearns also at wide receiver coming back off bye. So his wide receivers actually look pretty good.
Yeah.
Where they have been terrible all season. Oh, and he's got Willie Snead in his flex, who's also a really good wide receiver, caught 2 touchdown passes last week. So a tough matchup for you this week, especially because of Scott's wide receivers. His running backs aren't really anything to shake to stick at. It's Ryan Matthews and Shane Vereen. And then he's got Charles Clay at tight end, who has been up and down overall, not great. And Philip Rivers at quarterback, who is just throwing for all kinds of yardage. However, without Keenan Allen, his production may tick down slightly there. So this is going to be a really close matchup, I think.
Yeah.
Just looking at it across the board, I'm going to call it a coin flip.
Yeah. So looking at what Scott has pulled out for the season since week 3. Where he hit his lowest of low in week 4, 83.5 points. He has been on a steady marathon of an incline, going from 83.5 week 4, week 5, 106.5, week 6, 114.5, week 7, 128.8, week 8, last week, his season high of 149.1 against Jared, as we discussed earlier today. That is an incredible trend line that I don't like in the slightest.
Yeah, you don't see that often. It is very, very rare that there is a steady movement in one direction like that. It's usually lumpy,
mm-hmm.
Where you've got some up and down weeks, and that's an impressive 5-week run. I mean, it helps when you start at 83 points. You can kind of only go.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Yeah.
But hey, you know, he ended at 140. What did you say? 149 last week. So. Yeah, that's his season high. And you know, we talked about it last week. Now that he's got Dez and Alshon back, his team looks much better. Yeah. But you know, those upward trends like that, you know what I say about that? It's not sustainable. So, we'll see if he comes back to earth here a little bit against you this week. I'm sure you would be very appreciative of that as you attempt to cling to life this season.
I would not mind it. we'll see. I like, you know, I'm looking at my team with the exception of defense. I would love to. I wish the Cardinals weren't on bye, not just because for obvious reasons, but because the Cardinals have been my jam. That was another team that I thought I was going to be going week to week on, and I've stuck with them every week, sometimes to a chagrin. They have not had their explosive game, you know, that like they had in the first couple of weeks of the season. But they've been my consistent defense, and I would love to have them rostered this week. Although I'm glad they're not playing the Seahawks, because I would not if they were. But the way that I look at this team, I'm going, okay, boys, this is it. You know, this isn't so much the Hail Mary yet, but it is the let's circle the wagons and let's roster a winning team. And I'm looking at my boys and I'm going, yep, this is who I'm willing to go into battle with. And if we die, we die. And if we live, we live. I like the team, and this is it. This is our chance. I wish Sammy Watkins was healthy too. That's a bummer. And he may be. He may actually play this week, and we'll see. But
if he plays, that would be a big boost to you since he's playing against Miami, whose secondary is not good.
Right. So that would be helpful. But other than that, I'm putting in the go boys. We'll see how they do.
Yeah, so one of these teams will have 6 losses after this, and we'll essentially have to win out to have a shot at making the playoffs. So you don't have to win out from here, you know, to make it to 8-5, but it sure wouldn't hurt you.
Yeah.
In terms of your odds at making the playoffs, I do think that the cut line is going to be 7-6 to make the playoffs. I think that's what it was last year. As I look, there were actually 3 7-6 teams who made it last year. We had a little bit more of a top-heavy team or a top-heavy lead last year with 3 teams at 9-4 or better. The year before that, 7-6 also made the playoffs. 2 teams at 7-6 made the playoffs, and 1 team at 7-6 did not. So I think 7-6 and the points for tiebreaker is going to be the cut line because that's essentially what it's always been. And you got to get 7-6 to have a chance, and you got to score more points than the other guys.
Yep. Imagine that. Points and wins. It's fantasy magic. Football. Well, speaking of magic, let's hop over to discuss this week's commissioners' rankings. The power rankings are in. It's time to rank the power rankings. Pete, you did a good job. You got them out on time this week.
Thank you.
A quick glance demonstrates that yes, Brent still is sitting at number one and has been for 6 weeks straight. I enjoyed your comment going all, Rhonda, is it Rousseau? I never pronounce her name right. I hear it. Rousey. Is it Rousey?
I don't know if I've ever heard it.
Rhonda, I think it's Rousey. Ronda Rousey. Yeah. On this league, racking up the submissions. Yep.
Yeah. He's been in the number one spot for 7 out of 8 weeks this season. The only time it wasn't in was in week 2 when he suffered his only loss. So,
Derek have been holding strong too.
Yeah, he's number one. Derek and I have been kind of playing leapfrog at number 2, number 3. Biggest riser this week is Chris jumping up to 3 spots to the number 4 position. Brock actually moved up 1 spot to number 5. And then the biggest faller was Ben, who fell 3 spots down to number 7. He lost to Brent and generally just had a real stinker of a week. So his points 4 was not where he'd like it to be. There's kind of a clumping of points scored, which will also make it really interesting in the playoff conversations. There are 5 teams that have scored between in a 15-point range from 992 to 1,007 points right now. Mm-hmm. So those 5 teams who are currently in number 4 through 8 in the power rankings are all really, really close. In terms of the points scored and thus the playoff tiebreaker. So that will be really interesting.
Yep. Well, my favorite 2 comments, I'm going to call 2 of them out that I enjoyed the most. The first one was the one that you directed at your brother ahead of the Elwood Bowl round 2. And that was, someone should have told your players that their week 7 byes were over. Very well crafted.
I mean, it was, week 8 was a disaster for Andy, because in week 7 he knew he was going to lose.
Yeah.
All his players were on bye. He's going up against Derek, so he didn't even really try. I don't think he played a defense or a kicker in week 7. And so he scored 71 points. Yeah. Well, week 8, he's got a kind of a, you know, not a must win, but would really like to win matchup against you. Gets those players back from their bye week, and he scores less. I mean, he just scores fewer points than he did in week 7. So it's 64 points. 6 points lower than what he did the week before when he didn't have a defense and a kicker. So tough week for Andy. Hate to, you know, dogpile on him with the power ranking comments, but
True. Hey,
this is the Truth and Reconciliation podcast.
Indeed.
And
be no reconciliation without indeed, truth.
These are the power rankings sponsored by Truth. So gotta lay down the law when necessary. Well,
fortunately, your brother had the World Series attendance that allowed him to cope a little bit with the loss.
Right.
Getting to enjoy that in person. Although I heard from him that it was quite a startle to get home from said World Series to check the score and then and then poop his pants.
Well, he probably didn't poop his pants, but he found out his team had pooped their pants all over.
There were pants being pooped in. I mean, I know this in some way, shape, or form. My second favorite comment was the one directed at Brock, where you were making a comment about how paltry his DST has been this season, yet it saved the game for him this week.
Yeah, it was so ironic to be watching that Monday night game. And Brock wasn't watching at the time. He was hanging out with his wife, so I was texting him the whole time. I mean, I was literally giving him play-by-plays through text message because he had a one-point lead over Brian, and he had the Carolina defense, and Carolina was ahead of Indianapolis 23-20, and Indianapolis had scored 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns to get it back to that point, and then they were driving with 2 minutes to go, and they get down to right near the goal line, I believe, or at least in the field goal range. They did get down to the goal line, and Luck almost threw an interception in the end zone, which would have secured the victory for both Carolina and Brock. But instead, they settled for a field goal, and that field goal put Brock down by 1 point instead of being up by, I think he was up by like a fractional point, by like 0.2 points. Mm-hmm. And so he needed his defense to get just a sack as the game went to overtime. Just get a sack, don't give up any points. In fact, they were able to give up a field goal, and he wouldn't lose any points because of how the scoring was set up. He would be in the same band of points allowed for his defense. And so they gave up a field goal in overtime, so there's no margin of error left. He needed Carolina to kick a field goal to tie the game and then his defense to score a point for him to win, and that's exactly what ended up happening. Mm. Carolina kicked a field goal, tied the game. Carolina defense got an interception, and then Carolina won it, and so did Brock. It was a pretty wild turn of events to see it all unfold. You know, I told him, I was like, okay, so now what you need to happen is Carolina to drive, kick a field goal, tie the game, overtime keeps going, and the defense. And that's
exactly. Needed more excitement.
Yeah. So. And yes, it was ironic because for the season up to that point, through the first 7 weeks, his defenses had combined to score 8 points, and he got 9 points in week 8. So more than doubled his season point total for the year from his defense. So just a fun win for him.
Well, fun season overall. Great commenting. Great to have Jared on board with us tonight. Any closing thoughts before we head into week 9? I'm hanging on by a thread. You're playing your brother, and we've got some pretty big potentials because there are a lot more coin tosses than there are shoe-ins this week.
No, it's wide open, except for Brent. Basically, no team is safe in terms of a playoff spot right now. So. It is still really anyone's game as far as making the playoffs goes, and I think we're seeing that what we thought of teams earlier in the season is not going to hold up for the whole year. The teams that were not good early are improving. Teams that were good early are getting flagged by injuries, and everyone's kind of meeting in the middle. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it, and it'll be an exciting finish of the season as we get the divisional gauntlet started again this week.
That's right. Well, I'm looking forward to talking about the stats and projections from the playoffs. Be sure to tune in next week. Now, I will tell our listeners we will likely have a break over Thanksgiving, but we'll return and resume as we get back at it. But we'll be looking forward to connecting next week and discussing whether or not I'm still alive in the Pellwood fantasy football race and what's being projected on from there. So thanks for tuning in tonight, Pete. Great show. Great to have all of our listeners tuning in. We'll be looking forward to having and hearing from more of you before the end of this season. In the meantime, he's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.